Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is why blank lost, and this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.
Welcome back to the Why Blank Lost Circus. I'm your ringmaster, David Bloomberg, and with me, of course, is my co-host, a man who is not a clown, Big Brother 21's Ovi Kabir.
Hey, best intro I could ever get. Not a clown is my new plaque title. So happy to be here as always and excited to talk about this week.
Yeah. Last week, you know, I said that we couldn't blame Daniel, although he played a role in what, you know, happened to Nicole. We couldn't blame him completely, but we can and we will blame him for what he did this week, leading to his own eviction.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, he multiple times said on that he wants to, if this move will work, he will be the new Dan. You know, there'll be a new Dan in the game.
Yeah.
And he did make his own funeral. The issue was, is that he set himself out with it too. He laid in the casket and nailed it himself. So he forgot that you're not supposed to nail the casket down. Dan jumped out of it. He just stayed in it.
Yeah. Give a little bit of a preview here before we get into it. I'm wearing a shirt. You can't see it, especially if you're listening, but the shirt I'm wearing is a nuclear explosion. And it says it seemed like a good idea at the time. And I think that's, you know, that briefly summarizes Dan's play. But, you know, we have to find out all of it. And to help us in that regard, we will follow along with our usual method of looking at all the information about Daniel from TV, live feeds, interviews, etc., and then comparing his game to a set of guiding rules for winning that I originally wrote way back in 2004 and have modified since, with the most recent version at robhaswebsite.com/bigbrotherrules. Now, Dan said he's a super fan who had been trying to get on the show for 10 years. So I'm sure that he was familiar with these rules and did everything he could to play accordingly, right?
Yeah, he really read it like a Bible. He made sure he adhered by every single rules. And that's why we do these rules. Unlike any other podcast, they might talk about so many different things. And what we talk about here is a deep dive in game theory. So let's figure out whether Daniel read all the rules and actually did them.
Now, before we get to them, of course, we discuss some things about the week in general. Now, let me start out, even though we're, you know, not talking about Daniel and the rules yet, let me talk about him in the brief time we've seen him out of the house. I will say that he handled himself better than I expected in interviews. Mind you, that was a low bar. I pretty much expected him to still have that same personality he did in his final speech. But, you know, he resisted the urge to make a generalized apology. Like a lot of people will say, well, if I offended anyone, I apologize. Which is not an apology. He said he wanted to watch everything so he could address specifics. Now, that's the right thing to say. Do I think he'll ever actually properly address those? No. He'll probably end up on social media defending himself like too many of them do. But, hey, we can hope, right?
We can hope. And here's the thing is that I think it showed that, one, Daniel is media trained in the sense of his answers is to questions. It's really difficult to answer questions when you don't have all the information. You're just kind of getting barraged with people telling you what you did in the house without you seeing it. So there's going to be a level of defense any Hauskas has with that. We'll get into how he answers certain questions, and I wish hopefully he'll kind of be more open to accepting some of his shortcomings down the line. But here's the thing with many house guests, you have some house guests who go through the ringer within the Big Brother house. They come out, try to reform themselves, and some do it, and some people play to the camera or the Twitter audience in a sense. So whether he changes or not changes, I hope to see the best, but we can only talk about what we know now about
him. Right.
So we'll have to wait and see.
Yes. Now, before we get to that, some other people to talk about. One of them is Kyle. No, not his showmance with Alyssa, though, of course, that will continue to affect his game as he tries to balance with the leftovers. I'm talking about something we didn't even see on TV, but everybody who has been paying attention to the live feeds or social media knows about.
Yeah, you know, I was really hoping that when we talk about Kyle, a few weeks beforehand, we'd be able to talk about how he put together the leftovers, how I hope he really doesn't go in the showman's with Alyssa. But we saw kind of a heel turn with Kyle, and he has, you know, rectified in certain ways with gameplay. But we saw this narrative he was pushing these last few 10 days within the house with another house guest, most specifically his white counterparts, Michael, Brittany, Turner, etc. He was essentially afraid of a bigger group forming that resembled the cookout 2.0. And he kept talking about how he's worried that these people will come together who aren't them, essentially, who is, you know, from Terrence, Monty, Taylor, the people of color, the black house guests in there, and turn against them like the cookout. And here's the thing. I've heard a lot of people talk about, well, hold on. Like, isn't it normal that we should potentially have that conversation, talk about it, especially when we had a alliance like the cookout, which was the first time fully a whole black alliance that picked one by one different house guests off there. So here's what I'm going to say. Understandably, you can have a worry about that. You can think about that and try to, there's nothing wrong with making sure you're fortified as a house guest that people won't come at you. Here's where Kyle, I believe, went wrong. And this is where I kind of talk about, I feel like implicit biases came in play. BB24 is not BB23 by any means. What we have seen for the last 4 weeks, mostly, we've had black house guests, people of color, a diverse amount of people hit the block. And yes, we have a higher percentage than any other season, usually, on this season of people of color. But wouldn't that still show that the people of color and the black house guests are playing with everybody? They don't mind taking shots at one another. And here's the issue. Kyle put together the leftovers. He put a diverse group of people together. And now he's saying we need a white alliance to counter something that's not happening. And that's my issue with it. And this is kind of where I feel like a lot of this discourse was, is that there's one thing about talking about it, but then there's another thing pushing a narrative that you know to not be true in there, that there are people trying to turn on the white house guests in the house when that wasn't really happening. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are going to have questions, conversations about it. You might agree with me, disagree with me. The thing is, it was just disappointing to see, because if you look at this house as a whole, there are no players right now from both sides really playing the game based on race. They're not trying to make alliances based on race. They're really playing a strategic game, and the leftovers formed because of the untreatment and the bullying around Taylor. But now it's become something different. And so Kyle was the person who steered that forward. And so it's unfortunate for him to kind of, what I kind of use an excuse to protect Alyssa, because this didn't come out until his relationship with Alyssa formed more. So, I mean, that's my take on it, David. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I talked a little bit about it, I think, on the RHAP Sunday night episode recap when we got to the live feeds portion of it. Because like I said, they didn't show it on TV. I think you summarized it well. I mean, the main thing is he's taking these people who have nothing in common in the game, except that they're not white, and tried to agglomerate them all together. And no, that doesn't make any sense. There's no indication that that's true. They're actually fighting against each other. And so it was just bad.
It's bad. And the last thing I'll say about it is that when people are saying, well, why can't we talk about this? You can talk about it. You know, whether you think it's smart or not, you can still have that worry. But he was acting upon it. He was actively trying to make strategy around the white alliances when he saw no proof that these people were being disloyal to him. He was trying to get Michael to make sure Daniel doesn't go home because he's like, they're going to come for us. He was trying to keep Alyssa safe. But he realized, I think halfway through the house, that one side of the house was playing a very poor game compared to the leftovers. And two, Terrence was trying to get out Taylor. He was realizing that, wait, there's probably, they're not really just coming for
and
us.
Monty. And trying to and get Monty. Monty. Yeah.
And trying to, so it's just, he was trying to create. He wasn't just talking about it. He was actively creating a white alliance to combat something that wasn't there, not on the basis of strategic gameplay, on the basis that he's worried they're going to come after him when they've given him no proof of that. So last thing I'll say on that.
All right. Well, another thing to mention on speaking of Terrence, it might be a preview of next week's podcast because I don't understand why Terrence decided to jump on board the Daniel train as it headed towards a dead end. And you know what happens when a train hits a dead end?
Boom.
We discussed on the preview podcast that I was originally rooting for him because of his Chicago origins and because he was the oldest house guest. But that stopped a while ago. I just don't know what this man is thinking.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to say something I think is interesting. This is my conspiracy, but I think this is where production interference comes just a little bit. And the way it came by is within the DR, the diary room. When you're there in the diary room, they will direct questions to you and you can start to ascertain the narrative of the show will go. But it can work the other way around. And I feel like the people in the diary were talking to Terrence was like, so it's time for you to make your big move. You've been talking about it for a while. What do you think your big move is? Do you feel like Daniel is close to you as an ally? Yeah, he is actually. You think it's time for you to try to make something work because you feel like you have a lot of autonomy in the game. Do you want to talk about that? Yeah, actually, I want to make that. I feel they guided him like a sheep to make these moves, to think that he needed a big move and Daniel was the person, because I cannot think of any other logical reason that he thought he was jumping on a ship that was not just sinking. It was sunk. It was shown to be gone. I don't know. And it was just laughable. I love how they edited it, where it was like, this is my master plan. It's working. Cuts to Michael and Brittany. We're not doing that. This is such a stupid idea. Why would they think it would work on us?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you were in the house. You know more about the questions, obviously. Maybe he interpreted it that way because we've seen, if there's one thing about him, is he will kind of latch on to whatever the last person was that talked to him. I don't know. He just became this super tight ally and buddy of Daniel. And it's like, why would you do that to yourself? And to the point where even after it's obvious, everyone knows Daniel's going, I'm giving him a sympathy vote. Why?
It's weird and strange. And I mean, I don't understand why Terrence is getting this, because he's been talking still with Jasmine, with Daniel, while they were still in the house the last few days. He doesn't really like Taylor. He didn't think there was a clip where he talks about how he didn't feel like, how could she win Miss Michigan? You know, like how did she win this patch? And so it's weird. It's strange that like this doesn't benefit him strategically. And I don't know why I don't feel like the door has been shut on him from the other end to like, they've been wanting to work with Terrence in some shape or form. Monty has opened those conversations. Taylor has tried in some ways. Michael, Brittany, but he for whatever reasons, he's deciding that this is his hill to die on. And, you know, there's an opposite person of a salesman who will sell anything, but there has to be a name for somebody who buys everything. Yeah. And that's Terrence.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? Like I said, depending on the outcome of the HOH and the veto and everything else, we may be talking about him next week, but if so, we'll get into more of it then. Besides what we've already discussed, is there anything else that you want to discuss before we get to the rules?
No, I think we got plenty to talk about, Daniel. So if you're good, I'm good over here.
Okay. Well, of course, there's one more thing, which is that the we want to mention that the Survivor version of the rules we're about to discuss come in a shorter and much more colorful version in poster form. You can go to robhaswebsite.com/yxlostfeed, scroll to the poster and click on it. In addition to the poster, we have other ways to get the rules. There's the poster t-shirt. There's the checklist t-shirt. And of course, there is the mug. So again, you can go to robhaswebsite.com/yxlostfeed and you know, click to your heart's content.
Yes, I mean, that type of merchandise, if you're walking out, you're going to look good in it. There's no way you can go wrong, you know? So, honestly, we need to make a different version of the shirt you're wearing and get that on there, because I feel like that would be a seller.
Yes, the blowing up of your game, yes.
We could just put, like, any house guest name that's going out on that.
Yeah.
The explosion has to be Taylor. That's going to be it. You go against Taylor, and that's what happened, essentially.
A little plane flying across, dropping it.
Yes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
All right. Well, when Daniel was in the house and on his way out, he acted like he was the only one playing the game, which would seem like he must have done great at scheming and plotting. But we might just find out that wasn't the case. In the few hours since he's been out, he repeatedly said in interviews, "The emotion got me." There won't be any argument from us. At least I don't think so. But is it really that simple? I'll answer my own question. No, it's not. He did many things wrong. So let's get started on them as we figure out why Daniel lost. Now, because Daniel and Nicole were joined at the hip, we're going to do the rules in the same order this week as we did last week. So we're going to start with the fourth, which tells players not to let their emotions control them, because once again, we really can't even talk about Daniel's strategizing until we understand his emotional behavior and how that impacted everything about his game. After all, as I just mentioned, he did admit in multiple interviews that the emotions got him and he didn't handle them well. He told Dalton Russ, "I entered this game hoping to remove all emotion because I believe that is the way to play the game correctly. I am an emotional person at heart in the real world. It's very hard to remove it, and I thought I did, and obviously it got the best of me." Now, here's the thing. I'm not entirely sure Daniel fully realizes the extent to which his emotions interfered in his game, in that almost all of his game was based on him seeking revenge for imaginary things Taylor did to Paloma. There are two layers here that we need to break down. First and most importantly, as we all know, Taylor didn't actually do anything. But the second is that Daniel knew Paloma for all of a week, and he was going around saying he loved her like a sister. He blew up his entire game for her, the game that he spent 10 years waiting to play. And the best part is that she was planning to target him because she wasn't impressed by his behavior.
I think you've put it very well.
I know that was
quite, quite nicely, I will say. Here's the thing. Daniel has been talks about how the fallacies of the other house guests were because of their strategic maneuvering, how they didn't play strategic enough. However, without realizing, the strategy in his game was so based on his emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think here's the thing. Within these after interviews that I'm seeing from him, when he talks about his emotions getting the better of him, he's relating that to his loyalty because of how much he cares about Paloma, how much he cares about Nicole. He's so loyal. And so when people come after his friends, he has to defend them. He gets emotional. But that's not what we're talking about his emotional capabilities and the issues. He didn't defend them. He was a war dog against others that caused this all to happen. Mm-hmm. With the whole Paloma incident, it became a weird relationship where he, like you said, has been trying to play this game for 10 years. And he meets this person, and within 2 days, he's joined to the hip and is basing their whole game on him. Based on she was doing lies and was going to try getting him out eventually. And does the same with Nicole. He bases his relationships on anger against other people. I don't feel like he truly bonded with some of these people in the way he thinks he did. They bonded over hating somebody else, and that was Taylor within the game. And so the reason why his strategic was revolving around emotional ability, because all his strategic thing came from emotions of hating on Taylor. And so it's just I can't even say it enough. He portrayed his emotions not in the right way, I don't feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's kind of a funny coincidence because right now on the Challenge USA, we're seeing something similar happening. Several players have done things that are bad for their own games in the name of revenge. Mm-hmm. And the worst of these were a couple of other Big Brother players. And while I still disagree with it in those cases, Daniel's situation is even worse than what they've done. Because Dan, you know, they knew each other for like the whole season and outside the game. Daniel knew Paloma for a week and he's acting like they've been best friends their whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole situation got so inside his head that not only did he blame Taylor for Paloma leaving, but at one point he claimed Taylor was stalking him and trying to mess up his mental health, like she has these magic powers, you know, that she could just beam nasty thoughts into him. You know, he complained to Nicole that Turner didn't finish the job of avenging Paloma and said it made him sick. He added that Turner's speech about bullying was a joke when it's a real life situation, mm-hmm. which, of course, he delusionally believed was Taylor doing it to Paloma. And he even thought last week that he and Nicole should try to get Turner on their side by playing the emotional card about how it would be a victory for Paloma if they sent home Taylor. No, it's just another instance of how clueless he was. Why would you think that Turner was so fixated on this imaginary issue when Turner was the one standing against them?
It's so strange. And I mean, I think this is the issue. What comes back to it, when you feel these relationship bonds with people are based on certain other things, loyalty versus it was actually made on hating on somebody else. He thought Turner was loyal to them because he cared for Paloma. But no, it's because they all had a common enemy in that first week, which was Taylor at that point. And so I think he equated it wrongly. He thought which one comes first. You know, mm-hmm. we are against Taylor because we're loyal to Paloma. It was kind of the other way around. They were against Taylor, and by proxy, they became closer to Paloma.
Yeah.
And so he let his own emotions just steer every single part of his thing. And that's what the big thing I hope he realizes down the line. When we talk about his emotions getting the best of him, it's not talking about his loyalty to these players. It's about equating loyalty versus vengeance.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we discussed a lot of other examples for this rule in last week's podcast. We may have even mentioned the Turner thing. I don't remember. But because the two of them shared many of the same delusions. In addition, Daniel at one point said he wanted to keep things game, not personal. And then continued to make ridiculous personal attacks against Taylor. Compounding this, on July 23rd, on the live feeds, he said that if America thinks he's an effing a-hole, he obviously didn't use those words, he will apologize and say, we don't understand, and everyone else in the House would back up how terrible Taylor was. So even then, he was saying he'd apologize, but not mean it. And it's like, No, you know, I mean, it's just, it's part of the same thing. Is he going to go back and address that? How do we even believe that his apologies are real if he does them when he's said ahead of time he's basically not going to mean it?
There's no clue. We'll have to wait and see about this. Mm-hmm. And Tom can only tell. And I think what's going to be really interesting is the tone we'll see the House guests when they come out of the House, how they react to these pre-jury members. And I think that's really going to set the tone. And that's not to say if somebody forgives somebody, you mean we have to forgive them in that essence. But I think that's going to shift certain things. One thing I'll note too, and I don't think I'll get ahead of myself with this because I feel like it's in the tone, but because of his emotions, when we think about the leftovers, the day when Daniel had no reason, had no strategical reason to berate Taylor. I'm not talking about when he nominated her. I'm talking mm-hmm. about when she was praying over Nicole going through that, you know, her having like being upset at Taylor. He comes out and says all these horrible, nasty things to Taylor, who doesn't even gives him the benefit of the doubt and thinks he's joking, you know, thinking trying to laugh it off. Mm-hmm. And he does says, no, that his emotion, there was no gameplay to it. It doesn't matter too in the Big Brother house. Even if you dislike somebody like that, when you blow up on them for no reason, no strategical reason, if you're just hitting low too, not somebody who has any autonomy in the game at that point, it's not going to benefit your game. And that's what we saw is that he created the leftovers. He literally, yeah. he was the reason, the catalyst that they came together. And he talks about, oh, I don't like big alliances coming together. It's like stupid. It's a bad game. Like it's bad for the game. He talks about in his exit interview with, mm-hmm. I believe it might have been Julie. Even.
Well, I think like, it was everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
But they didn't come together to change. You were good in your position. It's because of you and your emotions that allowed the leftovers to rise above in the ashes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that actually leads nicely into where we're going next, which is rule five, continuing out of order, because it tells players they need to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And, you know, last week we had half of the worst defender duo for this rule. And today we have the other half. You know, he rubbed so many people the wrong way. And as you just mentioned, even Julie noted that his treatment of Taylor helped spark the formation of the mm-hmm. leftovers. When Julie is picking up on something, although it's probably a voice in her ear, but, you know, and this is all related to the fourth rule leading into the fifth rule, because he couldn't control his emotions. And that meant he wasn't able to pretend to be nice. So another perfect example. He had a possible chance to get pulled into a new plan by Kyle and Michael this week. But immediately before and after Nicole's eviction, he was so negative that those who were considering it immediately started leaning mm-hmm. against it because it just wasn't worth it to have to deal with him. You know, Kyle said Daniel put a huge target on his own back by calling out Monty and Michael as the people who are going to be in the final two. Now, eventually the plan was dropped for other reasons that we'll get to, but it was already on shaky ground because of his behavior. Mm-hmm. He should have tried to reintegrate into the house, but he chose to blow up instead. You know, and it just makes no sense. It for a super fan, you should mm-hmm. know that's not how you behave.
Here's the difference, too, because there's time to play nice, you know, where you need to pretend it might be nice. And there's also time where you need to take a stand and it might help your game to be fiery. Mm-hmm. The issue is that what we see, and this is a good for all the Survivor fans there, you know, when you're making fire, if you don't have any oxygen in it, it's going to go away. You need to blow in the fire. You need to give it room for it to grow. And in this house, you can be a fire, but your house guests will help you grow that flame up. The issue was, is he burnt everybody around him. He wasn't just targeting one person. He didn't put his singular focus completely on Monty and says, hey, if I'm in this house, I'm going straight for him. He put it on Michael. He put it on other players. Right. He put it on Taylor. He made it to half the house he was going against. And that makes everyone fearful, even his own allies, because that means if you're allying with him now, your enemies against half the house. So playing pretend, being nice, if he was just nicer to at least 3/4 of the house, it would have done something. He could have just chose one person or he did, but he just wasn't able to ever play nice with anybody. And even his own allies, like you said, he pushed them away.
Right. I mean, there have been many examples of Daniel's bad behavior beyond, you know, what we've already talked about. I mean, we could go over all of them, but people have seen them all. Were there any other specific ones that you wanted to mention, or do you think it's all well known enough that we can move on?
It almost blurs together with his whole thing. I will say, too, though, I think one thing, his inability to not be condescending in conversations when he was talking to Alyssa, to other players, to make them seem like, hey, basically trying to spell it out to them because he felt like their strategic prowess was very low. So he had to, as he says, he had to teach them the game. The way it came across with all these other house guests was, even when he was trying to be nice, he was coming from a condescending way, not in a mentor way, whereas a teacher-student relationship. It was more so as like a mean stepdad who doesn't want to play ball with you, you know, and just telling you how to do it because your mom said you guys got to spend some quality time together. And that's how he acted with basically so many people in the house outside of Nicole. And we saw where that sent her.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Before we leave this rule, I do want to mention how Daniel acted as though he liked the idea of the leftovers coming together in response to his bullying when Julie told him after his eviction. And then again, in some of the interviews. Somehow in his head, though, he keeps forgetting that he was the bullying situation. He's like, oh, yeah, I really like to see when the underdogs get together to fight against someone like that. You're the someone like that.
I don't know who's he thinking. Who would they be referring to is like the bullying part of it. Like when you do the numbers in the leftovers, who could be the bullying? Like it leaves you, Daniel, and Nicole's out. Who's left there?
I think he just has a divide in his brain. Like, oh yeah, I love it when this happens and I'm going to pretend I wasn't the cause of it. You know, it's just, yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I just, I guess he's good at playing pretend now. It seems like on these interviews in certain ways.
I mean, he normally pretends to be Elvis. So now he can, you know, pretend to be something else. So.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's go ahead back to the first rule, which, of course, is to scheme and plot. As we all know, Daniel was the only one playing the game in the whole house. Everyone else was terrible. Right. We're done. That's it.
I mean, I think we should have crowned him as winner by week one. He should have been. And here's the thing is, I guess this is the only part where I'll give him some. How he had a plan in place. He did try to scheme and plot. Like he said, his goal he had, I believe he talked about in his ex interviews multiple times. His goal was to win the first HOH, make a day two, like a final two by day two, win a veto competition. And then the only two he didn't make was jury and win the game. There are probably some more ones, but, He was strategic. I'm going to give it to him, but he had the folly where when you think you're the smartest person in the room, that's when you probably aren't. Because like you mentioned in our past podcasts and our video episodes, the smartest people are usually the ones who think that somebody's outplaying them already.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they were all outplaying him. That was the situation. And he just had no clue what was going on. He more or less eventually acknowledged as much in telling Mike Bloom, they obviously are playing the game. It's just not necessarily to my liking as far as strategy, obviously, because it didn't benefit me. And then he also said, there's a new school way of playing and an old school way of playing. I try to toe the line of both because I'm such a huge fan of the show, both strategically and socially. And then he added to Sharon at Us Magazine that he doesn't like the mass alliance thing, which I'm guessing is what he means by new school. Here's the thing. You've been trying to get on for 10 years. I haven't gone back and checked, so maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing that in the vast majority of those 10 years, mass alliance was what happened. We've been complaining about it for almost 10 years, probably. So, you know, but the thing is, no matter how much we complain about it, no matter how much he doesn't personally like it, you can't go into the game and just decide you're going to be the one who changes it. You know, you have to play within the confines of the game. It's like going in to survivor and saying, well, I don't believe in immunity idols, so therefore I'm going to pretend they don't exist. Or, you know, even within Big Brother. Well, no, I didn't like it when they added the veto, so I refuse to play in any veto competition. No, you have to play the game that's there. And the strategic game that's there, like it or not, is a big alliance and then sub-alliances within it.
I think this was such a such a interesting response he had to it. And I'm trying to think the right word for it, but it's almost a straw man's excuse in the sense that this isn't what a big alliance is. And I get what he's talking about, where we don't want to see big alliances. And your point is correct too. Like, this is part of the game. If you're going to try win game, you can't be upset that part of the game, the meta of the game, is right, doing so well in it. But here's the difference with the leftovers and any other type of alliances. All winners get through by the end with alliance. There's barely any winners in all of Big Brother history who didn't have some shape or form of alliance, from whether it's a four person to a six person to a majority alliance. Here's the thing though, this wasn't a majority alliance at first. This didn't start as a super alliance. This was seven people who were left out of the majority alliances. And within these seven people, they were still revolving. There was so much room to move in there, where also they almost could have convinced Kyle to get them out. They almost convinced Michael to not actually push out Daniel, but the way they strategized in here, it didn't work. They basically had five to six people come to Michael and say, hey, this would be a good play. So what's the difference between that? That's another majority alliance of five people right there. So it's a smaller alliance, and this alliance ended up lost. I mean, that's how this game is played. It's alliances versus alliance. It wasn't, and that's the issue with it. When you talk about majority alliances, the idea is that there's one huge conglomerate and then there's individuals around it who are just getting picked off one by one by one. The difference with it with this season was there was an alliance that formed from a bigger alliance leading them out. Now this alliance was warring against another alliance. It wasn't individual. So he's completely misreading this. And I hope that maybe as he gets out, he can look at it and realize, whoa, okay, maybe this was actually kind of old school and new school fusion of a season.
I mean, I've never even heard of old. I mean, lots of people talk about old school Survivor, new school Survivor, middle school Survivor. This, I think, was the first time I've heard of new school Big Brother. Now, maybe I've heard it and I just don't remember, but it doesn't seem to have that, you know, difference that we're used to seeing. But, you know, part of his screw up, and maybe it's because he didn't want to play this way, but part of his screw up came when he was HOH. Mm-hmm. He tried so hard to not overplay like Frenchie last season that he overcorrected to the other side by not doing enough to actually gather an alliance who could protect him moving forward in the game. It was like whatever the opposite of HOH-itis is. He didn't want to exercise any power. He was so focused on not getting blood on his hands that he was an incredibly weak first HOH. You know, he talked about going after the house target rather than making his own moves. He gave crap reasons. And like one of his reasons, Michael wanted to talk game with Daniel. Daniel said, nah, not really. And then he nominated Michael for not talking game with him. It didn't even make sense.
No, and you cannot expect. And I mean, this was the same issue with when we talk about Pooch, when he went home, is that he tried to become friends with Michael 3 days before he's going out and had no conversations with him before. Daniel threw so many people under the bus, and then he expected them to come back to him because he's some strategic lord over people. And it just was, he was overestimating his ability, underestimating other people, and then realized that actually it's a really open field. Like right now in this house, well, we can talk about, you know, there's the leftovers too, but there's still a lot of open ground that some people could slip in who aren't in the leftovers. Within the leftovers, there's a lot of movement. Certain players are probably going to take a shot earlier than later. I mean, this is a very fluid game we don't usually actually see in recent seasons where there's, I mean, at this point, I could see 7 to 6 different winners make it to the end, you know? So, which is exciting. He just wasn't one of them.
Yeah. Never. I want to go back again to that Michael situation, because this was another example of poor strategic play by Daniel. Michael pitched Daniel with wine to play the game with other fans who, you know, also want to play the game that way. And Daniel called it boilerplate bullcrap and had already pegged him as a super fan, but said there was only room for one super fan. I mean, what is he working casting or something? But the thing is, a super fan would know you don't decide for no reason to try to get rid of another super fan. You try to get together with them. You work together as super fans to go against the, you know, the Mactors and the recruits and the Instagram TikTokers and you know, that's what you do, like Michael and Brittany have done. But no, Daniel thought he knew better, and he was like, no, I'm going to get rid of the other super fan. You dummy.
You know, I like to think now, and I know this, we're going to talk about this later on where I'll plug it in, but when you mentioned TikTokers, now that when David Bloomberg, if he inevitably plays Big Brother, he will be labeled as an influencer / TikToker because he's growing on there. So if you haven't followed David on TikTok, you need to go do that. But you put a great point down. And here's the thing is, he used the same strategy. This is where he had conflicts. He wanted to get Michael out because they were the same type of archetype. He's like, we can't work together, which is dumb. You should work together. You should keep each other safe. But in the same way, into week three, week four, he's trying to now lever Michael to get rid of Monty, who right now Michael has established himself as a really strong physical game player in the sense that where he's literally winning everything. So why in the world would he want to get rid of another big player who could be his shield? Why would he want to get rid of Monty? Because then who are they going to point again at him?
Daniel was going to be his shield. Daniel said, I will volunteer to be your shield. Yeah, I don't want a shield that as soon as the arrows start coming at me is going to move over and let them hit me, because that's exactly what would happen.
Exactly. He's the opposite of Taylor, where Taylor, anybody who went against him, she would get them out. Anybody who would align with him would get out. Like, why would you want to align with Daniel? Every single ball, one by one, they're going away. And what is the common factor? Is they went against Taylor and they aligned with Daniel. So why would Michael want to do that?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, he's like poison.
In the house, he was.
Yeah, he was. Now, Daniel did have other strategic failures through the game. So let's just go through a few of those before we end here. And this rule, I mean, Kyle had him completely bamboozled in terms of where his allegiance was. Daniel was so certain, you know, that they were together and against the others. And that was a repeated error by Daniel, as he thought he had the numbers to keep Nicole last week. And then he celebrated with Terrence this week because they were sure they were pulling the numbers together this time. What are you thinking? You know, every time you keep going through this and you don't understand it. They say those who do not understand history are doomed to repeat it. And Daniel did not understand history.
No, and it was strange because here's the thing. The way I look at it is when you realize some alliance member in there is probably not ready to work with you. They're not working with you. They're working against you in some shape or form. That is a poisoned well. That well of water is poisoned. So then anybody drinking from that well of water is probably not going to be privy to you either, aka Alyssa. So why did he put so much efforts of his own into trying to bring Alyssa over to him, thinking that, hey, I'm Daniel. I'm target number one. All my allies are gone. But actually, you should, Alyssa, I'm going to count on you to get rid of your Big Brother boyfriend right now. Does that make sense? Like, no, it doesn't. And that was the most confusing part of it, where he knew he had the information in front of him that Kyle probably was a double agent there, but then he still kept trusting Kyle. And when he realized he couldn't, he kept trusting the people that Kyle was closest to.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a term I was trying to think of earlier when we mentioned how he was splitting himself off in his brain, like, oh, I'm glad that they formed, and then ignoring that he was the bully. Motivated reasoning. You know, I think he is motivated to not recognize his own part even though he liked the idea. I think the same thing is true here. Yeah, the signs were all there that Kyle was not with him, that he didn't have the numbers. But motivated reasoning just took over his brain, and he just, nope, I want it to be, therefore it is. No, it doesn't work that way. You can want it all you want. It's not going to change it.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. That's, you can't change it. Do you you want to move into rule number two?
I do have.
Okay.
Two more things. One is, you know, he was so unable to understand the viewpoints of others. Mm. And I think that goes also to what we were just talking about, you know, not understanding why people would not vote with him. But another good example is when Turner saved Taylor and gave the speech about bullies, mm-hmm. Daniel convinced himself that Turner was America's player. It didn't make any sense. His move made no sense unless America told him to do it, and he won $5,000 for it. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, there people make decisions for other reasons.
Exactly. I mean, here's the issue, too, is like this. We are able to, because we have a viewpoint of the live feeds. We have all of you watching. We are able to study it and see this. And so we are able to rate players through game theory and talk about it. The issue, though, when you think of game theory, when you're a player in the house, you're not accounting for one, irrational moves, but also viewpoints that you might not see and certain things that might upend game theory. Maybe it might not be the best for Turner's game, but there's a reason for it. And I'm not saying that I feel that way, but Daniel should have felt that way. And right. You need to figure out what quality, what value does Turner hold that would be better to make a move that you feel like is against this game. Now, you need to figure out what that value is and ascertain that and work towards it, so that way you can be rise above it for your sake of your game. So he just kept chalking any movements that he didn't think were beneficial to other people's games as irrational. And you can't play the game like that.
Well, you know, but that's exactly why he's not the second coming of Dan Gieseling, because Dan had better players to play with. You know, if he only had better housemates, then he would have been the new Dr. Will, the new, Dan Gieseling. You know, that obviously it's the other player's fault.
I see. Here's the sad thing is, like, I feel like he truly believes that. Like, you're saying that. I if you told him, like, could I do a redo in this house with better players, the legends, mm-hmm. he would say, I'll do so much better. I'll do so much.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's convinced himself that he lost the game based on other people's irrationality. That he wasn't able to figure out what game moves they're going to make because they didn't have game moves. And it seems like that's his purview right now from interviews we've seen. Mm-hmm. But he changes his tune. I hope he does. I hope he realizes that, no, it was his fault that he misplayed this stuff. But, it takes a lot for any player to unite both live feeders, podcasters, and the casual Facebook viewers all together to hate one player.
And good job, Daniel. You did it.
he did it.
Now, I will give him this one small piece of credit.
Okay.
Although he whined that the season was over and he should just go right away after the Nicole vote, he did try to lobby and work on a plan mm-hmm. to get himself to stay. It's just that, like everything else he did, he failed.
He trusted Terrence.
Well, yeah.
He trusted Terrence to get it done.
Trusted himself to get it done. Yeah. Now, we can move into the second rule, which tells players not to scheme and plot too much and to keep their scheming secret. Last week, we discussed how Nicole and Daniel way over-schemed when Daniel got her voted out. Of course, in his interview with Julie, he denied responsibility because he wasn't the HOH. Again, this motivated reasoning, this split in thinking, you know, because the HOH couldn't have nominated her if he hadn't used the veto. So it's just this denial that he does.
That's just such an insane denial. That's like, you know, blaming all your problems, anything you do, be like, well, you know what? It wouldn't have been an issue if my mom didn't give birth to me. Like, it's actually on her. Like, I wouldn't have done this, and this if I wasn't born. Like, yes, no, there's a level of responsibility and accountability you have to hold yourself. Like, you took out Nicole's game, and he talks about he talks about his inability to trust Monty in some ways, or feeling he's shady. He lost because he didn't believe Monty tried to steer him. No one tried to trick you. No one tried to influence you to make a bad decision. You influenced yourself and other people for it. I mean, it's just mind-boggling where he over-schemed. He tried to outplay, like, you know, rock, paper, scissors, where you're like, okay, you're going to need rock, so I'll do scissors, but you think I'm going to do that, so I'm actually going to do paper. You know, he kept doing this till these players were just trying to help you out. They didn't have a scheme in there. Monty didn't want either of you guys to potentially go home then. And we see, if you want to talk about it, we see him overplaying too this week, where he tried to convince Michael to get Monty out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly where I was going, was, the whole group overdid it again. They had this opportunity to have Michael not use the veto so they could target Monty. And, you know, earlier we discussed how his emotional behavior helped start to turn the others against the plan. But whatever possibility he had of staying was blown up by the horrible strategy of him and his allies to all go up one by one and give Michael the same story word for word over and over again, showing that they were a unified group. You know, they thought they were all so smart. They were so proud of each other. But instead, they ended up convincing Michael of the exact opposite thing that they wanted him to do. You know, and meanwhile, they're over there celebrating early, just like Daniel and Nicole did last week. You know, they're giving each other high fives and stuff. It's like, oh my God, you never learn.
It's insanity just watching that playback. There were so many other ways you can do that. Just from a game strategical point, you could have incredibly done where you already know you have a group of people right here. Get some shape or form, Michael and a group of those three people in that thing, and then like coordinate that the two other people in the lines will come there. So now it's all five of you plus Michael plus Brittany, and then you throw out the idea in front of them all, and then start to have them like, oh, that's not a bad idea. Oh, maybe like Indy is not going to come up to you with her own plan and be like, hey, I really think Monty is the best decision. But in that group setting, you'll see other people confirming, you know, his idea, Daniel's idea. And maybe that would have influenced Michael Brittany. Well, wow, actually, like, maybe this group right here, we can make an alliance. You could have brought in Michael and Brittany into this group of five people. But instead of them, you tried to trick them. You tried to tell them, you know, you didn't want to bring them into this sub-alliance. What you wanted to do was enforce your will onto them. And Michael saw right through it. I mean, like, Michael's a smart guy, but honestly, you don't need to be very smart to realize one by one by one by one, people are all telling you to do this. Like, it's like spam mail. Like, if you're getting five, like, same spam emails, like, you know, you like, I'm a Nigerian prince and I would love to give you a loan of $9 million that you owe. Just give me your SSN and your credit card. Like, that was what it was.
A Nigerian Prince Alliance.
Yeah, a Nigerian Prince Alliance would have been better than what they had.
All right. Well, we can move to the third rule, which talks about the need to be flexible. And as we've been discussing, there was absolutely nothing flexible about Daniel's game. He was laser focused on vengeance for things that never happened. And even when he was provided with opportunities to change things up in the game for himself, he screwed those up as well. Daniel was on a one-way journey out of the game, and he refused to do anything to change course. Like I said earlier, he was on a train headed towards a dead end, and that was it. He was going full steam ahead.
You know what? This is going to be surprising, but I think I'm going to disagree with you on this one, David, okay? Being so, is because I don't know anybody would be that flexible, who wouldn't be flexible to be able to aim a fireball at every single player in the house. Usually you have a hit list, all right? When you have a hit list of players, you scratch off one thing and then you go to the next. You don't miss your target, then decide you're going to shoot at two more targets and then shoot at three more targets and continue down the list when you've gotten nobody out and you just add to the list. So there was a level of flexibility of how he just kept figuring out how to make justifications. And I forgot exactly. You said something motivation. You
motivated
said
reasoning.
Motivated reasoning. And I feel that coupled with confirmation bias is what Daniel truly had to really go against everybody But like you said, not very flexible, if we're being honest in that sense. But yeah, it's just wild. Just very wild that never taking a step back, just adding to the fire, keep pouring the fire.
Well, we could move to the sixth rule since we already did four and five, obviously. Yeah. And it warns against being too much of a threat. Now, one thing Daniel whined about during this past week was, I'm not a threat. Why are you focusing on me? I'm just one guy. You should go after the real threat. But this ignores the fact, and we discussed this some last week, that having someone in the Big Brother house who is dedicated to getting you out is a threat, even if they don't have a big alliance backing them up. But Daniel, on top of it, showed that he did have allies, as they proved with their botched plan that we just talked about. So, yeah, their numbers were smaller, and they were so strategically clumsy as to be laughable. Talk about clowns. But they were still there and could win an HOH or a veto at the wrong moment. And he could have done that, too. You know, Taylor even talked to the camera before the Daniel vote and said she couldn't understand why the other side would make Daniel their leader. Why would these people support him? And it emphasizes, again, the threat that he still was if he had stayed in the house. He was a huge threat to Taylor's game, of course. He was a threat to Monty. He had called out Michael before offering a two-week safety deal that I wouldn't believe in if you paid me. I mean, the leftovers needed to keep themselves safe. And if you've got a known person who is coming after you, get rid of them.
You have to. You have to. And it's just so frustrating because if he took a step back, one step back, he could have played a really strategic week because he was in a unique position where he really could have played a dead fish. Nicole goes away. He can really, I mean, he could have emulated Dan's funeral if he really wanted to be the next Dan, where he can literally lay out his game, say, I'm a free agent at this point, Michael. Yes, I can be a shield. I can win competitions, but no one's going to work with me. But in the back, also knowing he has some sleeper agents in those four girls plus Terrence. So he had people he could work with, but he made it so known. Instead of if he just played dead and played his cards right, where he then became kind of, you know, an underlord, mafia lord, you know, where he's like controlling it from the background, where he has these people, these alliances, but he's not making it super, you know, noticed. But instead, he came out guns blazing, tried shooting at everybody, and he called in for reinforcements. When that didn't work, he couldn't hide his threat level anymore. And there's a difference between being a shield as a threat, but also if you're a threat to every one person in that alliance, you're a threat to everybody in that alliance. He was shooting at Michael, he was shooting at Taylor, he was shooting at Monty. The only people he wasn't shooting at was basically like
Kyle and Turner.
Yeah. But everybody else was open game. And so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think last week we had talked about how Nicole, by her last day there, had either put on a happy face or accepted it. I think it was more a bit of acting, but he was still seething. You could see it on his face. Mm-hmm. And we saw it afterwards. He should have followed Nicole's example. Once it was clear she was going out, he needed to put on that fake smile and try, like I said earlier, try to reintegrate with the house.
Yep.
And no, he just wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it.
He wouldn't. I mean, that was a downfall for him. And it's just so strange from, like you said, like from his week one, where he was the opposite of HOH-itis, where he didn't want to take too much power, which inevitably made him become power hungry because he didn't feel like he had the power from his normal first week. And that's when, if you know the type of player you're going to be, what I always say is don't shirk away from that. You need, if you know, if you want, like, you're going to be a leader, you're going to be a power, you have to play that role up within, you know, smart ways, but you can't be something that you're completely not, because it's going to come out in different ways and then it's not going to be something you can control. Right. So what we just saw was just an unfortunate thing where he didn't want to be a threat first week and then decided he wanted to be a threat. And by the time it happened, it was just too late.
Yeah. All right. We can go to the seventh rule, which says to trust almost nobody. Now, one thing that Daniel repeated through his exit interviews was that he was acting on information provided to him by other people. And that misinformation led him to act the way he did. Now, once again, there are multiple layers here because, of course, even if all of it were true, the information, he still didn't need to act the way he did. But beyond that, this was a self-proclaimed superfan. And he just assumed that in Big Brother, what people told him was true? Really? Especially in the first week? I mean, of course people are going to do whatever they can to get the target off themselves. You're the HOH. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to get it on somebody else. But apparently none of that occurred to him. It just, oh no, everybody must be telling me the truth. You know, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to run with it. And then not only am I going to run with you on this, I'm going to pass everybody else and become the leader in running with this BS.
It's tough because, like, I want to call BS on this one because he's saying that he was listening to all these other people, but Paloma was really the only person in the beginning who was the one who was steering the ship.
I mean,
against
Monty
Taylor
did
Train.
Also. Monty,
and Monty as well.
Was pretty bad early on.
And so those two people, but as the weeks went on, he was the one saying his information. Like, we saw all the conversations, you know? He was adding on to it. Like, the whole Nicole incident when she was crying and stuff like that, she didn't feed him any bad information. I mean, she was...
Well, she did.
Upset.
It was
she did.
Her misunderstanding of the situation.
Misunderstanding. And then he comes over there. But that's the difference between people trying to feed information and people talking about their feelings. Like, he would take something, misinterpret a misinterpretation, and then act on it. It just became, it's the story of Daniel's game.
Yes, yes. And speaking of the story of Daniel's game, it is about time to wrap things up. So what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts. I think Daniel wanted to play like Dan Geeslin. He wanted to have all the hoops to Hollis. He wanted to be a strategic mastermind, and he failed in most incidences. One thing he did do that Dan couldn't do, he truly perfected the funeral where he actually put himself out of the game. So he didn't fake the funeral. He actually did the real funeral in the Big Brother game, and that's why Daniel lost.
So when he was still in the house, Daniel said, one of these bozos is going to win $750,000. Crazy. Should have been me, Amira, or Nicole. Now, this was just one of many things Daniel said that showed he really had no concept of how to play. All three of those players had huge flaws in their game, many of which pointed in the same direction. Yet to Daniel, they were all brilliant. Daniel frequently complained that he waited 10 years to get on Big Brother. Maybe he should have actually paid attention over those 10 years. Instead, he got in and tunnel visioned on Taylor, yelling at her, saying not to speak to him again, etc. He truly helped to cause the alliance that took him out. While he was whining that no one else was playing the game, that alliance ran circles around him and massively outplayed him, making him look like a fool in the process. As Michael said on the live feeds within the past couple days, they think we aren't playing the game. We are beating them at the game. What is real, Big Brother? Us doing what they want? And indeed, Daniel frequently criticized Michael for being a super fan and not keeping him in the game. But Daniel had so many other problems that made it more difficult. He was incredibly unlikable. He didn't have good relationships with many people in the house. And he made doubly sure that the leftovers would not want to keep him around. Daniel's downfall was indeed partially emotional, but he also had massive strategic faults, some of which were caused by those emotions and some of which were entirely separate. He was convinced he was a great player, but he was truly one of the worst in the house. Going through every rule as we have, we found that he managed to fail in every single one of them. And that is why Daniel lost.
Well put. Well put. I mean,
got that out.
We got that out. I mean, we've been waiting for weeks to do this one.
Yes, exactly. Honestly,
we knew it was going to come. I'm just so glad we were able to do it before our jury.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, before we continue here, you know, let me remind everyone that, you can get the shirts, the checklist shirts, the poster shirts, and the poster themselves at the YX Lost Feeds page at at robhaswebsite.com/yxlostfeed. And of course, I almost forgot the mug. So yes, again, you know, go there, head on over there and click to your heart's content. Sorry.
Oh no, you're good. I was gonna say, don't forget that both of us are very active on several different social media platforms where we discuss Big Brother and number of other topics. On Twitter, I am at the Obi Kabir and David is at David Bloomberg. We're also both on TikTok, where I am Basmati Boy, and where I've been posting a little bit more. I've been talking about something. So there's some fun little videos there. So go check that out. And David is at David_Bloomberg. He's been lately posting about an average of 2 videos where he talks about why Blank Lost for Survivor South Africa. It's 1 to 2 minutes and they're really enjoyable. So you should go check those out. And also plenty of other Big Brother videos. And I was not lying when I say he is blowing up. So please go check out his TikTok because he is going to be the next influencer we find Big Brother.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I think Taylor will have her Lay's endorsement before I get, you know, the influencer endorsement.
We'll see. We'll see. But also, don't forget, we're both on Instagram too. Dave is at David.E.Bloomberg. And he copies all his videos from TikTok over to there if you want to see those there as well. And I'm at Obi Kabir, where I just kind of post a lot about my corgi, where we go to eat, and just kind of some other things. But always, we always post about Big Brother. So if you have any questions, send me a DM on the stories. I'll reply there. And finally, let us know where you're watching this from. Did you come from our TikTok? Did you come from Twitter? We love to interact with you guys. And let us know if there's anything you like talking about, like us talking about, or anything you want us to discuss in the future ones.
Yes, yes. Now, also, another place that people can interact with me is if you're a patron on the RHAP patron Facebook group. So there's that. There's the Discord. I haven't figured out Discord yet. I'll admit it. there's also, of course, tons of other things that you get for being a patron, which you can find out at robhaswebsite.com/patron. There are 2 special patron-only Big Brother podcasts, early live access to former player interviews, and much more. You can support shows like ours and everything in the network by becoming a patron, again, at robhaswebsite.com/patron, or click on the link at our robhaswebsite.com/yxlostfeed page. And make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP podcasts by going, again, to our yxlostfeed page. You'll find great content like the daily Big Brother live feed updates, Big Brother Stock Watch, and much more. Another podcast you should look into is for Amazing Race Canada, which is in its 8th season this year. What better way to enjoy Canada's #1 summertime adventure than with weekly recaps from its 2 biggest non-Canadian fans? Join Jessica Leese and Dan Heaton each week as they break down all of the strategy, study the geography, speculate wildly on upcoming game twists, and much more. You can subscribe there at robhaswebsite.com/tarfeed or everything by getting the reality TV wrap-ups.
Oh, I love that. Me and Hannah are both huge Amazing Race fans, not because we think we could ever do it, but because we always talk about where would we argue within the thing and where would we lose, which is almost every episode. So I cannot wait to see that because I've been needing a dose of Amazing Race, so I can't wait to check that out.
Why aren't you and David trying to go on that? You know, you guys would be perfect. David gets on all these other shows.
That is true. David has a very unique ability to be able to get on any show he wants to get on. And I love to play the same role of basically supporting him as much as I can on Twitter. So if you haven't watched the CBS challenge, which David Bloomberg, even he is giving credit to David Alexander, which is a day I never thought I would see.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, thanks to Scott St. Pierre for the editing done on this podcast and to Will from America for the theme song. A special thanks to Hannah Lidsky, who has been the RHAP social media coordinator for the past 2 years and who moved on to her new job as a teacher as of a couple days ago. I know she'll do a great job because she was the one who taught me how to use TikTok. So everyone can thank her for that as well. And of course, thanks to you, Ovi, for once again joining me and discussing yet another person who blew up their game. Nuke their game because of their irrational hatred for Taylor. Maybe someday we will be able to move on to other reasons besides I hated Taylor, therefore I nuked my game.
Fingers crossed for it. Thanks so much, David, for having me. And thank you, everyone, for viewing us. Can't wait to catch this next week when we talk about why next week's person went home.
All right. We'll see you then. Bye.
This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost.